Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, everybody. This is Silvio Canto in Dallas, Texas, on Monday, July the 9th, where we are getting some pretty good summer rain here in North Texas. We don't get too much rain in July, so whenever it comes, we say, bring it on, because we could certainly use the water. Today, we're going to talk about the Supreme Court. This is the day in roughly a few hours. By the time you hear this, some of you will probably be aware of President Trump's nomination. He's supposed to make it known tonight at 9 o'clock Eastern time, so 8 o'clock our time. So when we do the show on Tuesday, we'll have at least the name of the nominee. But look, the four people that he's looking at least the four names that we hear in the media, are all very quality names. And I would be very happy with any of them. As I think it was Senator Lindsey Graham who said that we have four lottery tickets and they're all good. So that's how I feel about any of these people. They're all very, very good candidates. So people who should turn out to be very good Supreme Court justices. And so I'll let the president pick who he wants to pick. But the way I look at it is four top-notch people. It's going to come down, really. This is the interesting part about it. It's really going to come down to the red state Democrats. And I just read something here in the last hour or so that Senator Doug Jones, he's the new Democrat from Alabama who won that special election last year to fill the seat of Senator or Attorney General Sessions. This is the Democrat who ran against Roy Moore, the very controversial GOP candidate down in Alabama. Well, Doug Jones is actually up for re-election in 2020, not this year. But I think he understands that a fight with President Trump over a nomination like this just doesn't make any sense. So he said he's open to voting for the nominee. And then, of course, you have five other Democrats: Montana, North Dakota, Missouri, Indiana, West Virginia. These five Democrats are in very tough re-elections. And I'm not saying they're all going to lose, but the last thing they want to get into is a fight over a Supreme Court nominee, especially in states where the opposition is going to hit them very hard over their opposition to this choice. So my guess is that this is how it's going to come down. They'll get the 50 or 51 Republican votes. They're going to get a handful of these red state Democrats. And the person will be in the Supreme Court probably by the middle of September, just in time for the new session that begins in October. That's how it's going to come down. Whoever one of these four is selected by President Trump. Now, for me, the most frustrating thing is this pre-selection dance that we go to. I mean, you've got some Democrats basically saying, we're going to oppose whoever it is. It doesn't matter who it is. They're going to oppose. And I just find that to be so irresponsible. I mean, just totally irresponsible. And it bothers me a great deal because I remember how the Republican senators reacted to Ms. Sotomayor in 2009 and I think Elena Kagan in 2010 or 2014. I mean, in both of those cases, you had many Republican senators who were clearly opposed to Roe v. Wade, who were clearly, I mean, on the other side of the issues with the nominees presented by President Trump, by President Obama, but they made the decision, I think, in a statesman's-like way. They looked at it and say, look, he won the election, and he gets the right to pick a nominee. And that's the way it's always been. And I just find it very troubling that we've become so polarized, even when it comes to a Supreme Court nominee. Of course, there's going to be a big dance right now for the confirmation. Whoever the nominee is going to get 60,000 questions, 100,000 questions about Roe v. Wade. It's all about abortion, which I find also very troubling that we actually spend this much time on a single issue like abortion. Look, I have expressed many times my feelings about Roe v. Wade. I think it was a very bad way of solving the problem. I'm not, you know, if you believe in abortion, if you believe that a woman has the right to choose an abortion, fine. then let's settle that in the political arena. Let's have a vote in the legislatures. Maybe take it to the Congress. But let's have a vote. Let's have an up and down vote on this. Let's have an open discussion of this. And let's see where we go from here. What Roe v. Wade has done, I think, is that it shut out the American people. It basically said, decision made, you don't have to even express an opinion. And interestingly enough, one of the biggest problems with Roe v. Wade is that technology is now giving us so much information about what is going on inside the mother's body. I mean, we now have the ability to take a picture of the baby. In some cases, we can even listen to the heartbeat of the baby very early in the pregnancy. And this is, I think, making it difficult for Roe v. Wade to argue that this is not a life or that somehow a woman can do with her body whatever she wants to do. I just have a lot of problem with that argument, because if you can listen to a heartbeat, then this is not just a woman's choice here that we're talking about. Somebody's heartbeat is going to be shut off or canceled or terminated. So I just think that, you know, if I was a Democrat and I favored Roe v. Wade, I would say, look, you know, let's try to find a compromise. And the compromise is, okay, we'll keep a woman's right to an abortion, but at the same time, we're going to allow states to put whatever restrictions they want to put on abortion. Here in Texas, we tried it with clinics, making sure that the clinics were safe. Up in Iowa, they have a brand new law signed by the governor that says that if there's a heartbeat, you cannot have an abortion. Eventually, I think that's the only way the Democrats are going to win this argument. But this unconditional ideological support of Roe v. Wade to the point where you cannot touch Roe v. Wade because it's a woman's right, I think is going to eventually backfire on the Democrats. I've been saying for years that if you had left abortion to the states, most states would have some kind of abortion, would have some kind of a window for a woman to get an abortion, but there would be some restrictions on when, how early in the pregnancy, and so on. I mean, they just had an abortion referendum or a vote in Ireland, and they passed abortion, but only in the first 12 weeks. You cannot have an abortion after 12 weeks, a recognition, obviously, that something happens after 12 weeks, or at least in the minds of the people who are supporting this. So I think the Democrats have to come to terms with the reality that technology is making it very difficult for them to continue to make the case that there's nothing in the, or that this is simply a decision by the woman to, for her own body or whatever, as you know, the talking point goes, you know, stay away from my body. Well, nobody wants to touch your body. We just think that there's somebody inside your body that needs a little protection, namely a baby that you would eventually give birth to if you did not have the abortion. So, again, I don't know who the nominee is going to be. It'll be announced tonight. But I do think we're going to have one heck of a well, it'll be like the others, honestly. But I think this year is going to be even more dramatic because of the so-called resistance to Donald Trump. But I don't think this is going to help the resistance, what we're going to watch here in the next 30 days. Because whoever the nominee is, if you've seen their pictures on TV and if you've heard some of the interviews they've done before, they come across as very reasonable people and people who I think most Americans will come to like when they see them. They're not going to like, though, some of the questions that they're going to get from many Democrats, because they're going to be pretty mean and single issue oriented questions. And if the lady is nominated, Amy Comey Barrett, if she's the selection and they go after her religion, the Catholic religion, I think the Democrats are going to create a backlash over that. We should not be asking anybody about their religion. There's no religious test in the United States. Simple as that. We're going to take a little break. I want you to hear from my friend Carlos Geddes, and we'll be right back.
This Saturday night at Sissiki's at the Star, located at 6765 Winning Drive in Frisco. I'll be performing instrumental high-energy music at 6:30 until 9:30 p.m. Make your reservation today at 972-377-2276. Remember, Sissiki's at the Star is the place to hang out on Saturday night. For upcoming dates, look for me on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram.
And we have a link to all of that in the show information. You know, we have a great relationship with Carlos in our show. We get to play his music, and we get to tell you where he's playing. He's just an absolutely wonderful musician from Venezuela. And he's a very talented young man, does a lot of great work when he goes around town playing. We say happy number 91 to Ed Ames. For those of you who remember Daniel Boone, Ed Ames was Mingo on Daniel Boone's, his probably the second biggest character on that show. And just a great memory that I have of that show. And, of course, Ed Ames also has a great voice. He recorded that song, My Cup Runneth Over. And on this day, 1948, Satchel Paige made his debut in the major leagues 21 years after he made his debut in the Negro Leagues. He was like 46, I believe, by the time he got to make his debut in the majors. Pitched a couple of innings. Went on to have a decent season with the Indians that year, the Indians who went to the World Series. This is, I think, one of the greatest pitchers of all time. And you always ask the question, I mean, when you look at this man, you always ask the question, how many games would he have won had he been able to play in the major leagues? I think quite a few. I'm guessing around 300, 250 to 300 easily. But on top of that, I think he would have set a few other records. Strikeouts, I think he would have probably been up there. Maybe not as high as Nolan Ryan, but he would have been around 3,500, 4,000 strikeouts. And I think he would have probably been up there in the top five with respect to complete games. This is a guy who pitched every inning, every day, practically. And I think he also would have been quite a popular player because he was really a showman. He was great with the fans. He put on a great show. He wasn't just a pitcher. He was really, he was a ticket. As far as selling tickets, nobody did it better than Satchel. So we remember Satchel Paige, who broke into the majors on this day in 1948. Well, down in Mexico, we have an interesting situation. A week ago, we were talking about the election in Mexico, the election of López Obrador, who ran as a populist leftist. But here we are a week later, and it's interesting how people in Mexico now are sort of reconsidering this man, not because they agree with him, not for that reason, but because he seems to be coming across as a pretty moderate kind of guy. He seems to be holding back any radical ideas. And I think that there's a couple of things going on. Number one, I think López Obrador understands that the last thing in the world he wants to do is to create any kind of economic panic. And what that means in Mexico is a erosion of the peso, meaning a devaluation. That will freak out Mexicans, and that's not something that would be very beneficial to López Obrador, especially with him becoming president in December. And I think the other thing happening is just a little bit of reality. I think he's starting to realize that, hey, I'm now the president of Mexico, not a candidate, and he's going to have to work with the 47% who didn't vote for him. That 47%, I'm going to guess, was primarily middle class, the business class. I think a lot of those people are very much concerned that he's going to basically move the country to the left, and he's got to basically show them that he's not. And I think that's going to be one of the challenges that he faces. Well, we're going to wrap it up for today, folks. Again, as I said, there's a lot of rain going on. We got a phone going off here, so let's take care of that. It's kind of hard sometimes to deal with the phone when it rings in the middle of the show, but anyway, we'll deal with it in a second. But one of the things that we always love here in Texas is getting rain in July, and we're getting a little bit of rain right now in July, and that's something we enjoy a great deal. So have a wonderful day, everybody. This is Silvio Canto in Dallas, and whoever President Trump picks, I think it's going to be a good pick. He's got some really good names on that list, and I'm sure it's going to end up being a very good pick. Have a good day, everybody. This is Silvio Canto in Dallas.